Australia's chief nurse wins, Scottish nurses speak out, and the FDA considers Vicodin and Percocet again. Plus, we'll take a look at antidepressant overdoses. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I am your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the episode this week. We have a lot of brand new listeners, as we do every week, and I want to thank all of you who have been sharing The Nursing Show with people you know. Make sure if you're getting the newsletter or you've listened to a recent episode of The Nursing Show that you mention it to somebody so that we can continue to grow The Nursing Show audience. It's a great opportunity for us to bring together voices in nursing from around the United States and indeed around the world. And I welcome the opportunity to help participate in that process. So forward those email newsletters you get to your colleagues as you find an interesting episode that they might like to listen in on. And always talk about The Nursing Show when you have something you'd like to share with your colleagues, whether you're a student or a working nurse in a facility or someone interested in nursing. It's always great to spread the word about The Nursing Show. If you'd like to get in touch with me here directly, you can always shoot me an email to comments@nursingshow.com. Comments@nursingshow.com is the way that you can send me ideas for articles, links to news items you might have found. Perhaps you'd like me to cover something specific in a tip of the week in a future episode, or perhaps you need to make a correction. Maybe something I've said is incorrect in some way, and we want to make sure that this is the best possible information and that this community effort works for all of us. So it's important for each of you to make sure that you contribute by using that comments email line. Again, comments@nursingshow.com. As always, The Nursing Show is available to you free of charge, but that's because of the generous support of our sponsors. So give a click through, listen to what they have to say. It's always important to continue to support The Nursing Show by supporting our sponsors. Time to jump on into this week's news items, and I'm going to start off with our item from Australia this week. You know, we've talked about this before. The Australian Nursing Federation has managed to have the government in Australia appoint a chief nursing officer. This is a chief nurse who represents nursing concerns and community health issues that are important to nurses to the Australian government. And I think this is a fantastic idea. Other countries around the world have a chief nursing officer, and it's something that I'd like to see expanded here in the United States to give us more of a voice. But Australia's chief nurse and midwifery officer has been appointed president of the International Council of Nurses, the ICN. This is Rosemary Bryant, and the ANF, the Australian Nursing Federation, has offered their hearty congratulations, and I'd like to offer mine as well. You know, I think that it's initiatives like these, the fact that the nurses of the world are organized and keep in touch with each other, the fact that we are able to coordinate our efforts on a global scale that makes the nursing profession such a powerful voice for the health of our patients overall. And I like to see these kinds of initiatives. This is going to be a lot of issues that are going to be coming up as this, Rosemary Bryant begins her tenure as the president of the ICN. And there's a lot of things that are going to be focused on in the coming year as she begins her time in that office. You know, Australian nurses are an important part of some of the things that I do here on the show. I'm in touch with a lot of Australian nurses via my network here where I get in touch with people. We've heard from some of them here on the show, and it's just great to be able to continue to forward the cause of nursing and to talk about that. And I urge you to do the things you can do to forward the cause of nursing in your community. Influence people that are interested in becoming nurses, encourage them, and offer them opportunities to to continue to grow their abilities as nurses to be. And of course, mentoring new nurses and existing nurses as they change their careers into different areas are all important parts of continuing to support nursing as an important part of healthcare in our communities. So congratulations to Australia's chief nurse, Rosemary Bryant, as she assumes the role of president of the International Council of Nurses. In a similar article, or sort of similar, on a similar vein, I guess, the Scottish government had recently announced a change in their community nursing program in Scotland, and they were going to institute some major changes, including kind of doing away with some of the specialist nursing jobs over in that region. And one of the things that was quickly brought up and pointed out was some really big concerns that the Royal College of Nursing in Scotland had about the loss of those specialist skills. Most specifically, health visitor nurses, district nurses, and school nurses. These particular positions have important roles in overall community health, and by adjusting or changing their role or even removing their role from the community would have a huge effect on the overall health of the community. And I think this is very important because it is, we have such a broad scope of our practice and our roles in our different jobs, whether we're working as a nurse in an industrial facility or in an office marketplace, even where we are providing just general health initiatives, nutritional information, blood pressure screenings, things like that, all the way down to school nurses who are administering diabetes screenings and medications, dealing with students with advanced healthcare needs as we mainstream more students into the public school systems, or whatever the case may be. You know, these nurses that work out of traditional nursing settings are equally important, if not more important, than the nurses who work in a hospital setting. And we need to support the ability of these nurses in non-traditional settings or in these community settings and support their ability to continue to provide high-quality nursing healthcare and advice to their patients. And so I'm enthused by the fact that the Scottish government has listened to the concerns, and while they are going ahead with some of their community nursing modernization schemes, they are going to be not losing these specialist nursing skills in that overhaul. And I think that's very important because we need to continue to support, I think, the cost-effective approach that nurses can provide to improving healthcare without waiting until that patient has something seriously wrong with them and needs an overnight hospitalization or some extended procedure or other kinds of large dollar, large cost healthcare. This is important that we provide that screening, that health maintenance, that health improvement focus when we can reach people in their homes, in the community, in the school. And I like to see this kind of initiative continue. Next up, and finally in our news articles here, I found an article talking about the FDA, which is receiving a report from some FDA advisors that they remove Vicodin and Percocet from the market. Now, for many of us, these medications are sometimes the staples of the pain management prescriptions that patients are sent home with. These medications have been around for a long time. They're combinations of narcotics coupled with acetaminophen, and it's not the narcotics that are causing so much of the problem, although we know that narcotic pain medication abuse is an issue. But it's the fact that pain medication abuse is an issue, and these medications contain acetaminophen, that patients are taking the pain medication for the narcotics because they're addicted to the narcotics, but they're getting the negative side effect of an acetaminophen overdose and the concurrent liver issues, liver failure, and problems that are associated with that. And so the panel voted in a recent meeting to recommend that the FDA remove these combination prescription medications from the market, and that they also lower the dose for a patient to take acetaminophen. So often, and I think many of you have probably run into this, so often we run into patients who just assume that there's this hidden safety margin in the over-the-counter medication marketplace, that you can buy a bottle of medication at the pharmacist or from the drugstore or from the grocery store or wherever you get it, and you can take that bottle of acetaminophen pain reliever home, and that just because it says you're supposed to take one pill every 6 hours, well, there's a safety margin, you can really take two. Or if you can take two, you can really take four. And this causes a lot of problems because there often isn't as much of a safety margin at all built into that, that these patients are assuming something that is incorrect and maybe based on their experiences with other pain medications such as ibuprofen, where a normal medication dose might be one tablet or two tablets, but patients with severe back pain may get an 800 milligram prescription and they understand at that point that, hey, I can take 800s. That means I can take four. And of course, that's not always the case, and especially can't be translated to a different drug entirely. So there's going to be some interesting repercussions associated with this. And we've covered acetaminophen overdoses with Lisa Booz on this show in the past. Lisa, our guest from the Maryland Poison Center, has come in and talked about acetaminophen overdoses, the importance of rapid recognition and treatment of this problem so that they don't sustain permanent liver damage. And it's, I think, going to be an interesting case as we moderate the different types of meds that we're going to send patients home from hospital with when they have a need for home-based pain medication. And it looks like if the FDA follows this recommendation, that they are indeed going to take Vicodin and Percocet off the market. And so we'll have to fall back on some other meds, more narcotic-based and non-combination drugs. And we may also see a lessening in the normal dosing for Tylenol. So something to keep track of. I always try to bring these things up to you because you may have patients, if this happens, coming in to have prescriptions refilled and before they get to the physician, or if you're a nurse practitioner, you'll have to advise them that those medications are no longer available. Because of that last news article, and because we were talking about Lisa Booz there a little bit and talking about overdoses, we recently had an opportunity to talk again and record another segment on a different kind of overdose, talking about antidepressant medications and the overdoses that may occur with some of the common classes of antidepressants that we see out there. So without further ado, let's jump on in to this interview segment with Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center. Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we're back again with another segment of Tox Tidbits with Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center. Hi, Lisa. What do we have this month?
Hi, Jamie. Well, this month I thought that I would talk a little bit about antidepressants since they're widely prescribed in the United States and they seem to be used in a population at high risk for overdoses. In 2007, there were more than 97,000 antidepressant overdoses that were reported to poison centers in the United States. So it's important that EMS providers, nurses, and physicians, all the healthcare providers out there, have a little familiarity about what to expect from these antidepressant overdoses and how to treat them. So let's start with the tricyclic antidepressants. These antidepressants have been on the market for many years and at one point in time really were the standard of pharmaceutical care for patients with major depression. Some of the more common tricyclic antidepressants that you might be familiar with are amitriptyline, imipramine, bizipramine, and nortriptyline. These antidepressants were a common cause of overdose deaths until the early 1990s when newer and safer antidepressants started to come out on the market. So although the number of overdoses has declined since then, they're still widely prescribed and they are responsible for more deaths per prescription than all of the other antidepressants combined. Now, the tricyclic antidepressants have several mechanisms of action that produce their therapeutic and their toxic effects. First, they inhibit the reuptake of serotonin and norepinephrine, And that's really how they improve the symptoms of depression. They also have anticholinergic activity, and that produces atropine-like effects. The cardiovascular toxicity, which is a common cause of morbidity and mortality from these drugs, is due to sodium channel blockade and alpha-adrenergic blockade. And all of these mechanisms kind of put together will give you a vast scenario of different types of signs and symptoms that appear in these patients. After an overdose, symptoms usually develop pretty rapidly and usually within minutes or definitely within an hour, and they include tachycardia, drowsiness, and confusion, and then those symptoms quickly progress to more severe symptoms like coma, seizures, and hypotension, and actually it's the refractory hypotension that's one of the most common causes of fatalities with these drugs. A wide variety of cardiac arrhythmias can occur. Most commonly, sinus tachycardia is seen, but you can also see conduction delays, and that usually shows up as a prolongation in the QRS interval, so we do recommend monitoring for that. Now, seizures can occur, and seizure-induced acidosis can also make the cardiovascular toxicity worse. The initial treatment of an acute overdose consists of activated charcoal orally or by NG tube to prevent the absorption of the drug. It's most effective if you can give it within the first few hours of the overdose, and certainly in a patient that's awake and alert and can protect their airway. Sodium bicarbonate is first-line therapy for tricyclic-induced dysrhythmias. Sodium bicarb actually alkalinizes the serum, and this alkalinization improves cardiac conduction, it increases the blood pressure, and it will reverse metabolic acidosis. The dose that's usually recommended is somewhere in the order of 1 to 2 milliequivalents per kilogram. That's given as an IV bolus, and then that's followed by repeat boluses, or often once the patient gets to the emergency department, they're put on an IV infusion of sodium bicarbonate. Measurement of the patient's serum pH guides the dosing of the sodium bicarbonate after the initial dose or two. Sodium bicarbonate should be given in conjunction with supportive care measures. Vasopressors such as norepinephrine, IV fluids, and anticonvulsants should be given as needed. Lithium is another drug that's been used for years and years. It's generally used for bipolar disorder and depression. It can be quite toxic when taken chronically or in acute overdoses. Either way, people take them chronically and their levels go high, or they take an acute overdose. With just a change in their fluid or salt intake, or they may be dehydrated, they might have a change in their kidney function, they might have added new medicines, or they may just have an onset of an acute viral illness, chronic toxicity can develop in any one of those circumstances. Patients with toxic levels of lithium will develop vomiting, tremors, drowsiness, seizures, bradycardia, cardiac arrhythmias, hypotension, and coma. Patients acutely toxic, so they've taken an overdose all at once, they usually have more in the way of gastrointestinal symptoms, more so than the chronic overdoses, but those chronically toxic usually exhibit more severe neurological effects. Treatment's primarily supportive care and hydration to increase the excretion of the drug. Activated charcoal does not bind to lithium, so it really should only be given if you suspect that the patient has taken other drugs as well. Gastric lavage is appropriate to use. We don't generally recommend gastric lavage in this day and age, but it is okay to use that for lithium overdoses since activated charcoal is not effective, but only if the ingestion has been within an hour of the presentation. Another method of preventing absorption that's sometimes employed in acute lithium overdoses is something called whole bowel irrigation. Now, this involves administering large volumes orally of a polyethylene glycol electrolyte solution such as Golightly. Whole bowel irrigation essentially just flushes out the tablets through the GI tract before they have a chance to dissolve and be absorbed. Another method of removing lithium once it is absorbed is to use hemodialysis, and that's considered for patients who have developed severe toxicity or patients who have renal failure. Now, there's a fairly new antidepressant out now that's commonly prescribed. It's really unlike all of the others, and it's also associated with severe toxicity, and that's called bupropion. It's more commonly known by the brand name Wellbutrin. Tachycardia, tremors, and seizures are the most common toxic effects and can be seen with relatively small doses, even in some cases just double doses. Seizures occur within 1 to 4 hours if the product is an immediate release preparation. But the seizures can be delayed if the product is sustained release, such as a product like Wellbutrin SR or Wellbutrin XL. We've seen a number of patients reported to our center who remained asymptomatic or had very mild symptoms until right around 12 to 24 hours later when the seizure suddenly occurred. As far as treatment, activated charcoal should be given to patients who are awake and not seizing to prevent further drug absorption, and benzodiazepines like Valium or lorazepam or even Versed are the choice drugs for seizures. It's fortunate now, however, that we do have newer antidepressants that have been discovered and marketed that really aren't as toxic as the tricyclic antidepressants or lithium or bupropion. The selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, we commonly refer to those as the SSRIs, they've become widely prescribed for depression, and many thousands of overdoses are reported to poison centers each year. In fact, almost half of the antidepressant overdoses reported to poison centers in 2007 involved the SSRIs. A few common SSRIs that you might be familiar with are Prozac, Zoloft, and Paxil, but there are a number of other SSRIs that are out there being prescribed. Fortunately, in overdoses, most patients only develop mild symptoms such as tachycardia and drowsiness, and there are some rare cases of cardiac dysrhythmias. Two other drugs, venlafaxine, which is known as Effexor, and desvenlafaxine, which is now sold as Pristiq, are very similar to the SSRIs in their mechanism of action and their toxicity. So regardless of which antidepressant is involved in an overdose, it's really important to call the local poison center at 1-800-222-1222. And the specialist at the poison center will be able to help you to anticipate what symptoms that might occur in that patient and how best to treat that patient.
Well, Lisa, that's a whole lot of information, and I appreciate that. That's going to be very valuable to the listeners of the shows here. And we'll look forward to hearing from you again next month.
All right, Jamie, I'll talk to you then.
And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank Lisa for joining us and sharing her thoughts on antidepressant overdoses. And remember, you can always find more information and get more updates from Lisa directly from the Maryland Poison Center site. You don't have to be in the state of Maryland or even in the United States. You can freely get that information there. mdpoison.com is your resource there. And you can also sign up for her Tox Tidbits newsletters by email there, and you can get all that information. Great one-pagers that you can hang up in your break room or pass around as interesting articles that can be quickly read and followed up on as a great resource for medical information. If you'd like to get back in touch with me, don't forget, you can get more information and links to everything we talked about over at nursingshow.com. Go to nursingshow.com for all of the resources and show notes for this and every other episode, and follow up on the information that we provide here. General information is what we give, but you need to look into it more in depth and figure out how it applies to your specific scope of practice, and that's your job. Also, you can get in touch with us by email. comments@nursingshow.com is the email resource for suggestions, show notes, links, and also to get in touch with us if there's a correction that needs to be made. We want to make sure we get the best possible information out to you in the Nursing Show community. Time to close out the show, and we'll wrap up with Jeff Smith's excellent summertime classic, No More Summertime Blues. You'll find his music over at the PodSafe Music Network, or you can also find it at thejeffsmith.com. That's G-E-O-F-F, jeffsmith.com. And you can let him know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I want to remind all of you to have a safe and healthy 4th of July weekend, and also to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Sun comes. It seems like years since it's been warm like this deep inside my soul. When the summer wind comes blowing in, there's something I really gotta show. So let the sun shine, it's gonna be fine. I'll never feel the way I do like I feel with you. Everybody shout.